morning, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callan, President and CEO of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Meet the Expert. Today is very exciting. We're going to hear things that many of you have never heard before about mega trend investing. What is it? How does it work? How to be in front of the curve? What is the curve when it comes to trend and trend investing? And it's not just about investing in the next Amazon, but in the next great technology or science or shopping or travel way. What's the mega trend, the trend of the future? So we've got with us Jeff Spiegel. Jeff, let me welcome you.
Elliot, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Jeff is director and head of Megatrend Research, Megatrend Investing, and International Investing for BlackRock Investments. BlackRock is a $7.8 trillion entity. They're a monster. They make and lose more money than my company is worth on any given week. It's maybe even a given day. It's just so large. And we're a fairly large financial services firm in Northern California. It's just staggering for me to think of that number. So, Jeff, let me turn this over to you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what is Megatrend? Where are we going? How does it work? And then I'm going to come back and I've got a series of questions for you. And I look forward to the presentation. So I'll turn to you.
All right. So the key question there, what are megatrends? Megatrends are ultimately the long-term transformational forces that are really shaping our economy and our society. So, you know, just to throw out some fun stats, 1 billion hours ago, humanity emerged. 1 billion seconds ago, IBM released the first PC. And 1 billion Google searches actually happened just this morning. The idea here that I want to illustrate is the idea that structural changes, really transformational ones, are coming at us faster and faster. And let me draw this really important distinction between the structural and the cyclical growth opportunity. Structural change happens over long periods of time and generally moves in consistently the same direction, right? Long-term shifts that feel almost inevitable. Think about the rise of aging populations, middle-class consumers in emerging markets, long-term adoptions of new technologies. In contrast, cyclical opportunities are shorter term. Think about interest rates or commodity prices, the movement of the overall stock market in particular sectors. Those are cyclical. They rise and fall, and timing them can be really challenging. When we talk about megatrends specifically, we're talking about these long-term structural growth themes. And I want to come back to this idea of how much faster these are available to us now as investors. At the turn of the 20th century, most people got around by horse or horse and buggy. But actually, over 25 years, the automobile pretty much entirely overtook that mode of transit, right? From 1905 to 1930, the number of horse-drawn carriages in the world fell by 93%, replaced by the car. And if we move to the middle of the 20th century, about 1 in 10,000 American households had a television as GIs were coming home in World War II. But in half the time it took for the car to really take hold, suddenly in 12 years, 83% of American households had a television. So as you can see, this tech adoption is happening faster and faster. And as we step forward again into the 21st century, it took Facebook only 4 years to reach a quarter of the American population. And this year, actually last year in 2020, Disney Plus reached about 100 million people in merely a matter of months. All of this is happening faster and faster, and that presents opportunities for investors to profit from the adoption of these long-term structural growth opportunities. Of course, the key question is how. And we like to think about this as a Goldilocks problem. Single stock picking can be too narrow. Traditional indexes can be too broad, but a megatrend approach, in our view, can be just right. So I'm guessing most of our listeners today, and Elliot, obviously, you're familiar with FANG, F-A-A-N-G, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google. I would argue these companies rode the last 20 years of megatrends to become some of the global leaders of today. Facebook, social media, Amazon, e-commerce, Apple, the smartphone, Netflix, streaming, Google, arguably, the internet writ large. Now, any one of us would have loved to have been a very early investor in any of these companies. But what I want to demonstrate is identifying the themes that propelled these companies to success was a lot easier than picking the single stock winners. So we'll play a little game. We call it, can you spot the FANG? What we're going to look at here is a chart of two pure play e-commerce companies and how they were performing in the late 90s. Now, by the late 90s, I think the market knew pretty clearly that e-commerce was a major trend and that it was here to stay, but it didn't necessarily get the winner right. So company A, over this time period in the late 90s, was a seller of toys. They were up 213% online toy sales. Company B was an online seller of books. And you can probably see where this is going, right? Even though company A, that toy seller, was doing so much better, things changed over the next 20 years. eToys was the toy seller. They filed for bankruptcy in the early 2000s. Amazon, of course, was the book seller. An investor who held that investment for 20 years would have seen a 34x return on their capital, a truly staggering number. Now, of course, most of us, especially if you're working with someone like Elliot, know that you shouldn't put all of your eggs in any one particular stock basket, right? Diversification obviously helps avoid problems like that. But you still have to be careful not to be too diversified, right? So if you look at the NASDAQ composite over the same 20-year time period, you'd see that an investor who tried to play the e-commerce opportunity with that broad technology-focused index would have had a 3x return. Now, 3x isn't bad, right? Tripling your money over 20 years is nothing to sneeze at. But we have some pretty different outcomes here, right? Amazon delivered a 34x return. eToys would have caused its investor to lose it all. NASDAQ, 3x returns. But is there a middle road to be taken here? We would argue the megatrend is just that. So if you look at a megatrend index, in this case, MSCI's e-commerce benchmark, you'll see a 23x return over the time period. Not quite the 34 of Amazon, but you avoided the risk of an eToys and almost 10x what you saw with that broad index, the NASDAQ composite. Now, why? Because the beauty of that megatrend index is it didn't focus on the incumbents. It focused on new upstarts who were leaders in e-commerce, invested in a lot of them, including Amazon, including eToys. And it went globally around the world in an unconstrained way across sectors to capture the opportunity. In short, it went anywhere, but it focused on just targeted firms in the e-commerce space. We talked about FANG. Let's talk about Trend, T-R-E-N-D. Unfortunately, these are not my five big stock tips for the next FANG companies. I literally mean, let's focus on the trend rather than trying to pick that single name FANG type winner. So I've thrown around the term megatrends, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 times. Elliot, I don't know if you're keeping count there. But now that we're here, I want to tell you what the megatrends are. I'm going to stop the tease. So first, we have technological breakthroughs, long-term adoptions of new technology, AI, robotics, cybersecurity. Second, we have demographics, aging populations around the world and new consumers. Third, urbanization, the rise of cities, especially in emerging markets. Fourth, climate change, government, societal, and consumer preferences shifting towards cleaner solutions. And then, of course, emerging global wealth, the rise of the middle-class consumer in emerging markets. We'll take them one by one, but we'll start with another little game. And so for all the listeners here, think to yourself how you would answer this question. What would you rather sacrifice for a week? Your smartphone or dessert? What would you rather sacrifice for a week? Your smartphone or alcohol, right? A glass of wine with dinner, a beer at the ball game, now that ball games are finally a thing again. So keep your answers to yourself, obviously. Think about what you would say, and I'll reveal the national results. So drum roll, please. About 50% of people willing to give up dessert for their smartphone and a whopping 75% of people willing to give up alcohol for their smartphone. And of course, that's not because everyone is so enamored of the plastic or metal or glass that's sitting in their pocket. It's because we don't want to be disconnected from the world. And if anything, these statistics would have been surprising to us 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. But I bet no one listening today is particularly surprised by these stats because of the speed with which connectivity has become so central to our lives. And so when we think about connectivity, it's really the main driver of this technological breakthrough trend. About 35 billion internet-connected devices in the world at the start of this year, that'll top 75 billion by 2025. And as we become more connected, of course, we also face more challenges. So from 2014 to 2020, the number of cyber criminals in the world grew from 1 to 71. And 2020 has taught us a lot of really important lessons. As the world has moved virtual, as we've started working and living that way, that cybersecurity threat has become, unfortunately, even larger. But luckily, the investments in cybersecurity are combating that. So as we go through this section of the presentation, you know, we'll also talk about some mega rules, right? The things that BlackRock keeps in mind when we build these megatrend products. So let's start in 2000. We've got the five companies who are on top of the S&P 500, Microsoft, GE, Cisco, Walmart, and Intel. Now, a number of them were innovative technology-focused firms, right? Microsoft, GE, Cisco, and Intel, four out of five, actually. Fast forward to 2020, how many of those companies are still atop the S&P? Just one of them, Microsoft. The rest are all new players, Apple, Amazon, Facebook. And that really tells us that being a technology leader today may not mean you'll be the technology leader tomorrow. A new wave of megatrends is coming and will usher in new winners in the space, which is why when we build these megatrend strategies, we wait for tomorrow, not WAIT. We weight the stocks so that the small and mid-cap innovators that have the potential to be the mega-cap leaders of tomorrow are well represented. Our second megatrend is demographics and social change, aging populations. You know, there were 1 billion people in the world over age 60 back in 2015. There will be 2 billion, doubling by 2025. And this is leading to trillions of dollars more in healthcare spending in the U.S. alone, tens of trillions of dollars around the world. Now, that all sounds like a challenge, but longer, healthier lives is ultimately a good thing for a number of reasons. One, because it means so many of us are getting to experience longer lives, but two, because all of that healthcare spending is also driving more spending for medical breakthroughs in areas like genomics and in areas like immunology, which are really changing the game. Genomics is enabling personalized medicine. It's less than $1,000 to map your genome and have your doctor tailor treatments just for you. Immunology is changing the game in cancer. Immunotherapy, fighting types of cancers that have been resistant to traditional means like surgery or chemotherapy or radiation. And of course, these two areas came together in 2020 to the world's benefit. The mRNA vaccine, of course, is the output of the combination of genomics work and immunology work being brought together. And we see these breakthroughs continuing and that mRNA vaccine technology being applied to any other number of diseases over the coming decade and beyond. Our third megatrend is rapid urbanization, the rise of cities, especially in emerging markets. I mean, look at some of these numbers. Cities like Delhi and Dhaka will add 9 million citizens each over the next 10 years. Shanghai will add 7, Cairo will add 5, and we can go on. All told, we see this bringing $100 trillion of infrastructure spending to the world. And when you think about the cities of the future, really, they cover a wide range of things and likewise have been accelerated in 2020 as the infrastructure for the cities of tomorrow is being spent on by governments in the United States and around the world to get economies humming again. And that same story translates into our fourth megatrend of climate change, with spending on the part of governments going up massively to support clean energy projects. And we've seen it from consumers too. 80% of U.S. consumers, age 18 to 34, are willing to pay a premium for an electric vehicle. Countless companies from Ford to GM to the Volkswagen Group have announced when they will no longer be producing internal combustion engines. And governments around the world have set net zero targets as soon as 2050. So this shift is big, and a lot of the spending in infrastructure is specifically going to those clean solutions. Our second mega rule then is to connect the value chain. The idea that if you want to invest in one of these themes, you can't just pick a company. You can't even just pick a sector, actually. Ellie and I were chatting about that at the top of the call. You know, a lot of people associate electric vehicles with one company, Tesla. There's a lot more to the story. There's BYD, which is the Tesla of China. There's Valeo, which builds software and sensors to help self-driving cars navigate. There's Infineon that builds batteries, Albemarle that puts materials in those batteries, and ABB that builds charging infrastructure to help electric vehicles become much more ubiquitous around the world. Put all of that together, you've got an ecosystem or value chain. If you look at our self-driving EV ETF, for example, you'll see over 100 names because picking a single stock or a single sector isn't enough here. Our final megatrend is emerging global wealth, the rise of cities in emerging markets and their revitalization in developed markets. These are my favorite stats. China mints 2 billionaires every week. 1 to 2 billion people will enter the global middle class. In the next decade, 90% of them live in emerging markets. And my singular favorite stat, 44 people escape extreme poverty in India literally every single minute of every single day. And when we think about that, obviously there's a massive humanitarian benefit. There's also an opportunity created by the rise of these consumers. And so our third and final mega rule is to think beyond borders. Now, the reason for that isn't because the US isn't an amazing innovator. Of course, the United States is an amazing innovator and will continue to be. But think about the opportunity set beyond our borders. Take the internet, something that's fueled US growth over the last decade. Well, pretty much everyone here is already online. 90% of the US population, 300 million people online, only about 30 million people offline. Take a look at China. About 800 million people online today, and over 600 million people yet to access the internet. Add that up with India, that's over a billion people who've never tweeted, never streamed, never liked, never made a mobile payment. And that's going to be a huge growth driver in the coming years, and one that not just US companies will benefit from. In fact, I would argue primarily companies in Asia and South America and Africa, where these innovations are happening, will be the beneficiaries. So we talked about five megatrends: technology, demographics, urbanization, climate change, and emerging global wealth. We talked about three mega rules. Wait for tomorrow. Don't just invest in the leaders of today. Think about the future. Two, connect the value chain. Think about an ecosystem for these themes, not just one company. And three, think beyond borders. Don't just limit yourself to US innovation, but access innovation and opportunity around the world. And so I would just leave everyone with a thought, which is to put your money where your mind is. COVID-19 is going to change the world. The world will not be the same once this is passed. And I think that means that as investors, we have to rebalance, reinvest, even reimagine portfolios for the opportunities that that future will present. Elliot, thank you so much for having me on and letting me run through this. And I'm looking forward to just chatting through some of the questions from here.
That's great, Jeff. Thank you. I've got a series of questions that was well done. And of course, we'll talk offline about the best way for our clients to invest in BlackRock's megatrend. I don't really want to give that recommendation online here. We'll give it privately on that since we are portfolio builders. Let me ask you a few questions, Jeff, because I know you gave us basically a 40,000 foot level here. Let me just ask a few specific questions. And without trying to sound a little bit like a conspiracist at the same time, since I'm not a conspiracist at all. There are some theories about the structural changes that are going to happen to the PC market as we see it now. It's almost like watching Terminator in a way that you'll be wearing glasses, your skin will be different. Elon Musk is talking about a chip implant to the back of your head. Are we going to wear contacts? Is even the PC as we know it today a thing of the past?
So it's interesting. We've seen sort of fits and starts of this, right? Google was very excited about this concept of Google Glass, right? Where you wear glasses that essentially have a heads-up display in front of you. They effectively worked like an Apple Watch. Turned out nobody wanted to wear glasses like that. The Apple Watch, in fact, actually took off. So I do think ultimately the PC's days will be numbered. And I don't think it's actually primarily a function of, you know, being implanted in our heads or those amazing sort of like 3D displays you see on Star Trek or Minority Report. Actually, I think this thing right here is largely what's doing that already, right? Think about how much less time we spend in front of our PCs and how much more time we spend in front of our smartphone or our tablets. So I do think the PC is sort of moving out. I can't tell you if it's holographic technology or chips implanted in the head that will ultimately supplant this stuff 20 years from now. But I think a more mobile, more accessible, less hardware-heavy solution is absolutely where we're headed.
Okay. Let me go to the automobile for a moment, because everybody has a love affair with Elon Musk. I don't want to say everybody. There are people that have a hate affair with him, too. But there's a lot of love for Elon Musk, and there are people who think he's the smartest person on the planet right now, and he's Albert Einstein reincarnate, and there are a lot of wonderful things said about him. We'll forget politics for a moment, and it's a little bit of a rebel. But he's got the electric car, and I'm a little surprised we don't have a hydrogen car, and you didn't mention anything about hydrogen. Do you think that's a dead technology?
I don't actually. I think there's a strong future in hydrogen tech. When you think about sort of the benefits, the emission of a hydrogen vehicle is effectively water, right? That's a pretty amazing thing. And the costs to run a hydrogen vehicle are lower, right? One of the things that people forget about electric vehicles is that electricity is coming from somewhere. Just because you didn't stick gasoline into your car doesn't mean that the power didn't come from a non-renewable source. So I think hydrogen is still a few years out, but in a number of our investments around clean energy, in addition to areas like solar and wind and geothermal, we are looking at companies that are promising in the hydrogen space. And I don't know if it's as much of an automotive solution or just a general energy generation solution, but we see a lot of promise.
Okay. So let me ask you a question about urbanization. I get that China's, and I have another question about China following this, but I get why China's urbanizing because two-thirds of their population is just in nowhere land. It's agri-dirt, so to speak. I get why Russia is. I get why India is. I understand that. But in the last 24 months, and politically in the United States, I was going to 10 years now, we were going to more urbanization. Yuppies, millennials were moving back to the cities, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, they were booming. And then politics took over. And we had a series of riots, whatever you want to call them, if you agree or disagree, doesn't really matter. But there is a trend now in the United States to get out of the city and go to suburbia. I live in suburbia, San Francisco. My house is up 20% in the last year in value. Stupid numbers. And San Francisco is probably going to go down equally as much. Salesforce just announced that they're going to be eliminating people from the Salesforce tower and work at home. Work at home is definitely a trend. You talk about COVID-19 changes. That is probably a big change. My building in this, I'm in an office park in an office building, is 50% empty now. And I wouldn't be surprised if the owner had to file and his LLC here or bankruptcy just to restructure everything. So in the U.S., there is a trend against urbanization. So how do you reconcile global versus U.S. on that?
First of all, congratulations on the 20% home increase. That's nothing to snuff at. And I think a lot of people in suburban markets have experienced that, or maybe they've been on the other side of the trade and they've paid up 20, 30, 40% for a new place versus what it would have cost 2 years ago. So I wouldn't dispute any of that. I guess I think two things. One, when I talk about urbanization, that's the move of people to an urban area. It doesn't necessarily mean the downtown of a city. So what's the urban environment around San Francisco? I would describe that as the Bay Area. What about New York? I would describe that as the tri-state area, so on and so forth. So I think what we're not seeing, and people had sort of prognosticated about this early on in the pandemic, was companies moving to 100% virtual engagement, right? Generally, it seems like most companies, about 74% of CFOs, indicate that they'll let employees work from home 2, maybe 3 days a week. So if you work in New York, you work in San Francisco, in New York, you can move further up into Connecticut, further east onto Long Island, further south into New Jersey, but you can't move to rural Montana because you're going to have to show up at work a couple of days a week. So you're really just shifting the infrastructure burden from the city center to the broader metropolitan area. So for that reason, I don't see rapid urbanization reverting. But what I would also say is, most of this growth is driven in emerging markets by the growth of cities, right? Cities continue to grow in the United States, and I think will continue after COVID, metro area, but that's not the seismic driver of spending here. It's actually the fact that the infrastructure of our urban areas is largely in disarray, whether it's subway systems, bridges, roads, highways, tunnels. And so a lot of the spending to support urbanization is actually the money that's needed to maintain the level of urbanization we have here in the United States, in Western Europe, in Japan, and other places that are already highly urbanized.
Okay. So last question, Jeff. I want to talk to you about China for a moment. I believe, and it's just a personal belief, we are at economic war with China right now. That may spill over into a real war. I'm a little fearful for my children and grandchildren one day, that I think our next great war will be with China. There are other people who have said that China and the U.S. would never go to war because of the economic intercourse between these two mega companies. But you've got other parties like Russia that don't care about that, and North Korea, and they could easily stimulate a war. So I'm concerned that China has for a very long time eaten our lunch, and we're just waking up to that right now. And there are lots of people who are still asleep. So how does that affect U.S. innovation? Because we live in the U.S., and if the U.S. isn't evolving, changing, and growing, we're shrinking. And that's a bad place to be.
Yeah, so without sort of exploring the initial supposition of the question, I do think that, in all honesty, the technology competition between the United States and China is going to be one of the defining economic stories of the coming decade. And so I think as investors, we have to think about that as an opportunity, right? There are essentially increasingly two spheres of technological influence, one coming from China, one coming from the United States. And so, for example, when we think about our megatrend strategies, we want to make sure we have both types of technology. We want to make sure we have all the standards because it's not also a zero-sum game, right? It's not like Chinese technology will win and U.S. technology will lose, or U.S. technology will win and Chinese technology will lose. Excuse me. In fact, it's that there may just be different spheres. So it's possible that large parts of Asia may use a Chinese 5G standard, and Europe and the United States may use an American one. But either way, I think it's incumbent upon investors to be swimming in both ponds and capturing opportunities in Chinese growth as well as U.S. growth as this technology competition plays out. And the last thing I'll say is competition can be a healthy thing. And to your point about the U.S. being refocused here, sometimes a little nudge towards innovation can be helpful.
Well, that was great. We've been talking with Jeff Spiegel. Jeff is with BlackRock, a $7.8 trillion financial entity. He is the director of Megatrend Investing and International Investing for them. Jeff, I want to thank you very much for being part of this.
Elliot, thank you so much for having me.
And I'm Elliot Callen. We'll see you again real soon. Thank you.